Hello there, my name is Chris Kirk and welcome to TW Talks, the interviews podcast from Free Weeks Edinburgh. We are at Edinburgh Festival 2023. I have set myself up in a little room just next to the Bristow Square, George Square hub of the Fringe, and I am grabbing a load of people who are performing at the festival this year to talk past, present and future. The story so far, this year's show and what's happening next. Today, David Ian, who has a show down at Just the Tonic at the Caves called Just a Perfect Gay. I sat down with David early on in the festival to find out about that show, but also past and future. That's the format. Lots of interesting things to talk about. So let's get TW Talking with David Ian. Okay, I've got my next guest here at Edinburgh Festival 2023. David Ian has joined me. Thank you for joining us.
You are welcome. Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk about the show a little bit later, but I ask everybody, because we're, 5 days in as we're recording this?
Yeah.
So I am asking everyone right at the start, sort of, how is it going?
It's going. I am broken. I don't know how you're supposed to do the whole month. I think it's going well. I'm loving the show. Doing the show is the best bit. Everything else around it is proving difficult.
So the 50 minutes on stage is brilliant.
Great.
Literally great. Epic up until walking on stage and then walking
yes.
off stage.
So literally last night I was on the phone to my mum and I said, she's like, how is it? And I said, well, on Saturday night, the hour show was the best hour of my entire life. Great. But everything leading up to that and all of today, I've absolutely hated. So if we balance it out, it's probably just about tolerable. So I don't know how, I'm so tired. I don't understand. Is everybody saying this?
Everybody is tired.
Okay, good.
And then I shouldn't say this because I'm facing it. And obviously in this age, we're slightly more nervous of these things, but usually the so-called fringe flu kicks in.
Yes.
Towards the end of the first week, the start of the second week.
Yep, that sounds about right.
So we're going to get all my interviews in before everyone loses their voice.
Yep. I've been taking lots of vitamins. I've got some honey. I'm drinking loads of water.
Yeah.
I'm conscious of the tickle appearing.
Yeah.
I think it's imminent. And if it keeps drizzling like it has been,
yes.
then it's not going to help.
Yes. And whereas last year, I think people were still slightly on the social distancing, washing their hands
yep.
all the time.
Now we're all filthy.
Back to normal, aren't we?
Spitting in each other's faces and it's fine. Yeah.
So everyone will get full on fringe flu. But let's not talk about the pressing stuff. Let's talk about, okay, well, past, present, future is the theme. So before we get to the show, let's just talk about your journey into comedy.
Okay.
So I know you had been to the Fringe before, doing theatre stuff.
That's right.
So I'm guessing that's maybe as a performer where it began?
Yeah, so I'm a trained actor, but I always ended up doing comedy roles. Comedy was always like my bag. I'm pretty funny looking, I think, is what the casting directors found. It was always comedic roles or comedic shows that I was in. And I was talking to some mates one day down the pub and they were like, oh, you're just so funny, you should do stand-up, which I think loads of people hear. And I have always been adamant that it doesn't necessarily translate. So I decided we made a deal that they would stop asking if I went and did a course and they came to my showcase and saw that I was rubbish, then we would all stop. But I went and did it and I was like, I don't know why I've been doing acting. This is so much better. It gave me real agency because I could write the stuff, you can produce it, you get immediate feedback. And it just really scratched an itch that I hadn't even been aware that I had. And so I just started, getting heavily involved, gigging. And I think I probably found it slightly easier than most people because I was so used to being on stage and because I'd had that training. So I didn't feel like I needed to get over that bit. And because I'd done a lot of stuff around comedic timing and that kind of thing, it felt quite natural. And then I felt a bit stupid that I spent a lot of time telling my friends
that you didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
So let's do some timeline. How long are we talking about here, approximately?
About 2 and a bit years ago.
So that's what? That's kind of as we were coming out of the pandemic?
Yeah, that's right.
And I mean, one thing I'm interested to know, because I think most people have never been on a stand-up comedy course.
Yes.
And I think most people would not even know what that would
exist.
Well, yeah. A, that it exists, yeah. And B, what does it even involve? What happens?
Do you know what the thing I think about it is? What it really does is it's like your first few gigs, but in a concentrated space, and it forces you to write.
Yeah.
So it gives you stage time essentially, and you do you get up, you make a tit of yourself, you say stuff that you think is hilarious and isn't, and then someone who's a professional comedian tells you why it's not funny. basically.
And so is there any, like, where they say, this is how you do stand-up comedy? Or is it much more, it's a sort of an experimental workplace?
So there's a lot of, like, around joke structure, that's a Freudian slip, around, like, joke structure, different types of jokes, understanding why things work and why things don't, a bit of stagecraft and presence, but then it's a case of, like, right, what have you written? Let's see if it's funny, and this is why it isn't funny, this is what works, this is what doesn't. And I mean, as I'm sure is, you know, you would know anyway, like, it's all around editing, like, you're just using too many words.
Yeah.
So learning how to cut stuff out. And so I don't think you have to do a course. I think you could literally go and just open mic constantly for a long period of time. But I think doing like a really good 6-week course where you're going once a week is probably the equivalent of maybe 3 or 4 months gigging 4 or 5 times a week.
Plus, I guess and lots of comedians talk about this, that the first open mic slot, the first 5-10 minutes that they do, and that moment of, is anything I have to say actually funny?
Yeah.
Rather than doing that.
You mean they only get that feeling on the first one? I'm getting it every night right now.
But rather than doing that in a room full of strangers on a bill of other people, yep, some of whom inevitably are probably going to be more experienced or better, yes, than you, I guess you get to do it in a front of people.
A more controlled environment. Yeah. So, like, you do it in front of an audience who are there to be supportive.
Yeah.
It's also a big audience, which I don't know what the circuit is like, say, up in Edinburgh, but in London, one of the problems with the circuit is that the audiences can be very small because there's so many,
yes,
open mic nights. And you can't test anything when it's just other comedians, yeah, in the audience because we're all dead inside. you need real people. So it gives you that opportunity. It then gives you a bit of a false sense of hope, I think, because you think, this is great. And then you immediately go to your next one and you're in the back room of a pub where the microphone doesn't work and you can hear someone playing a slot machine and nobody really wants to listen to anything you've got to say. So, you know, you come back down to earth very quickly, but you're already much further ahead because you've got, like, the idea is that you come out of that with 5 minutes that is somewhere near workable. And I think sometimes you can go and see people on the open mic circuits. I run a club in London now, and you can see people that maybe haven't done a course, and they're just sort of 2 or 3 gigs in, and like 10 or 20% of what they've got is real gold.
Yeah.
But they don't know what to do with that at this point. And they will learn by the time they get feedback. And obviously the best feedback is that they record themselves and listen back and see what people laugh at.
Yeah.
But I feel like by doing a course, you get to compress all of that into a much shorter space of time, and you come out and you know, I record every gig, I'm listening to this, I'll try something 3 times, and if it doesn't work, it goes. It made me a lot less, I felt like I had to care a lot less about my material if it didn't work. At first I was like, a joke that I really loved but that just wouldn't work, I felt like I wanted to keep it going until everybody else got it. But I feel like
because it's the audience.
Exactly, the audience was wrong.
Yeah.
I had this brilliant joke that I was convinced was absolute genius and it just never worked. And the course taught me, it took the full 6 weeks, but I retired it before I did my showcase. I was like, it's not working. I'm wrong, basically. And maybe one day I'll come back to it and realize that I'd written it wrong or I was coming at it from the wrong angle. But if you've done it multiple times and it doesn't work, then, you know, that's on you, not the audience. And I think a course is really good at teaching you stuff like that.
So this is two and a half years ago that you did this course.
Yeah.
Here we are, Edinburgh 2023. Yeah. Full hour show is as part of the festival.
Yep.
And so this is the first year you've done theatre at the festival.
Yep.
But the first year doing comedy at the festival,
yep,
is your first 1 hour show.
Yeah. It's intense, isn't it?
Whereas, you know,
most
people will know, yeah, that usually the way people do the fringe is you come up and do some open mic spots,
yep,
and then maybe you come up and do a 20-minute, and then maybe you find another comedian and,
yep,
you do a 30-minute each.
Yep.
And then you arrive with the 1 hour.
Well, the problem is nobody else likes me, so I couldn't find someone to split a bill with. No, like, yeah, it's not a very traditional way of doing it. I'd already written an hour show by August last year, which I did down at Camden Fringe. I don't tend to do anything in a normal way. So with a couple of friends, I've started the UK's first LGBTQ+ comedy club called the Queer Comedy Club down in London. That's not a very normal thing to do within your first sort of 18 months. And I gig all the time, 5 or 6 days a week, every single week. And I decided I wanted to take the show I'd done last year and turn it into something new and brilliant that was ready for Edinburgh. So I worked with Dec Munro, who was the director on this show, and we just really like put an enormous amount of effort into it. And I've ended up with something that I think is pretty amazing. I think it's a really great show, but what I was not prepared for was how exhausting doing it all on your own is. So if,
yes,
I'd have done the other route, I probably would have been a bit more prepared.
I guess, well, let's talk about the Camden Fringe for a moment, even though we're sitting here at the Edinburgh Fringe, and the Camden Fringe happens at basically the same time as the Edinburgh Fringe. And I guess some people use the Camden Fringe, they have a really good year at Edinburgh, and then the next year they don't want to come back with another show, so maybe they do some performances in Camden, or they're just doing an off year, and they'll do Camden instead of Edinburgh. But actually, I mean, almost it seems to me the idea of maybe using the Camden Fringe as a way of piloting an hour, because as you say, it's not that hour you've got here, but you've sort of took that hour and learned from it.
Exactly.
And I have to, particularly when you live in London, presumably the risk of doing
much lower,
a bit of a run at the Camden Fringe,
much lower. like, you know, you've not got any of the accommodation, the fees involved are a lot less. Obviously, there's far fewer people.
Yeah.
But it had a really great vibe, and I learned a lot very quickly. As I say, it's probably not the path for everybody, but I was already a performer, and I'd already gone through several years of training for that and been on stage a lot, so I felt like that was a slightly different scenario. I wouldn't recommend it, you know, it was quite a baptism of fire, but that's how I live my life. So yeah, I think it's worked really well, and it really proved to me that I loved it. I very much wanted to test, like, okay, do you just like doing the, you know, gigging every night and getting people to laugh at 10 minutes, or do you actually have something more to say? And the reality is, I'm the kind of person who's got quite a lot to say, so I really need an hour. There's no point watching me for 5 minutes.
And one thing I often talk about with comedians, I'm really interested in that process of going from the 10, 20, or even 30-minute club set to doing the hour. And it is a big step up. And one thing which I know lots of comedians talk about is one of the challenges is that actually, if it's joke punchline, joke punchline, joke punchline, after about half an hour,
people can't bear it.
Maybe 40 minutes
of exhausting.
Push. So you've got to put that bit of the show in where it's like, okay, we're all going to chill for a little bit and then come back for a finale. So I guess, how did you find both last year and this year the sort of the structure of the 1 hour show?
So I did the show at Camden. I did on my own without any outside input, and I was very aware of this point that you. Around 45 minutes, you need to give everybody a breather from just joke. And I think I achieved that to a point, but I think actually I went slightly too far on the emotional side. This show, as I say, I've worked with Deck, who's an absolute genius and knows exactly what he's talking about. And I've been really grateful for his time and guidance. And the structure of the show has been really important. It's not just a stringing together of sort of 5-10 minute sets. There's an actual show, you know, with a story that's woven through it. There are jokes in it, lots of jokes in it, but it's not, you know, you're not going to laugh every 5 seconds and be exhausted by the end of it. You come out with a feeling. That's, I think, a really common mistake. Oh, I've got, you know, I'm doing 20 minutes, so I've just got to do, you know, 2 and a bit times that. And I think that's where I've seen some shows where you're like, this feels like it's a bit stitched together. Virtually everything for this show has been written specifically for this show, around the story of the show.
So quickly tell us, what is that? Without giving too much away, obviously.
Okay.
What is the premise?
So when I was 18, I went off to university in Aberdeen. I lost my virginity and my 2 straight male flatmates sent me a death threat. Which was dramatic.
I don't know why I'm laughing, but it's a comedy show.
Yeah. It sounds fun. But what happened at that point is I was like, oh, if I'm going to be gay and it's going to be this difficult, then I need to be brilliant at it. So I want to be the perfect gay. And I realize now that I've spent 20 years measuring myself as if I'm like, how am I doing against being the perfect gay? So in this show, I assess how I'm doing about being the perfect gay. And I use Cher, the singing sensation, as the measure of who the perfect gay is.
And how, again, without giving too much away, how does that work?
Is
there some sort of questionnaire based on Cher tracks?
I've run the science.
Oh, the science.
There's science behind it. And I award myself badges, a bit like Scouts badges, for every time that I think I do something
that ticks a box.
Correct. That achieves me being the perfect gay. And then I take you through like my life story. And then, we finish up just a few months ago when I went on holiday to Vegas. And it all comes together in a little crescendo. And I give you a song at the end, which
Cher
is
song.
Nice. You would think it would be a Cher
I
song,
would think
wouldn't
it would
you?
Be.
Bizarrely, it's not. unfortunately, it's not a Cher song. It's a song called Just a Perfect Gay to the tune of Just a Perfect Day, because I put the name of the show together before the show was finished.
Once you'd thought that out.
Yeah. Then I was like, oh no.
Can't lose that.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we finish off on this lovely song and it's nice. Yeah. So it's a feel good moment, I think.
And you did some previews of this show.
Yes.
And so where did you preview?
So I previewed down in London. I did whips and previews at my comedy club, the Queer Comedy Club. I did Brighton Fringe. I did Top Secret Comedy Club, a couple of other places around in London and Hull as well. So yeah, just a long process of putting it together, making it work, Manchester, making sure that people found it funny.
And did the show evolve during that process?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's so different now to even 2 weeks ago, to like just before we set off. It's so different to what opened on opening night. Yeah, just constantly polishing it and improving it. And now it feels like it really works. I love doing it. It's the most fun I think I've ever had on stage. And like from being an actor or filming things, this is just, it's an hour of utter silliness with like a real point behind it, which I love. I love if you can get some real stupid comedy that has something to say, and that's what I feel like we've got.
In terms of future plans,
yeah.
First of all, specifically for this show,
So I would like to bring it back down in its finished state, back down to London, and I'd like to take it to a couple of other festivals, ideally. We just finished filming a TV show called Live at the Queer Comedy Club for a streaming service called Out TV.
So that's linked to the club you run in London.
Yeah, right, exactly. So we did 6 episodes of that and I presented 2 of them. And we've got our production company that we set up has got a deal with them. So I'd really quite like to film my show maybe and some other shows and see if we could get them on there as well. That would be some really nice future stuff for it. And then if I survive this, I'd quite like to come back and do it again, I think. It feels like a bold thing to say 5 days in when like, I've just run here from flyering and getting my nails done. But that's the aim, I think. What an amazing opportunity to perform 24 times in a row and continuously polish and be around, like loads of my comedy friends are here, and get to spend all that time with people and the feedback from the audience that you can physically get right there and then. I mean, what an amazing opportunity. So I would love to do that again.
In terms of the club down in London, I mean, it's interesting, we're talking about the onstage bit is the easy bit, actually,
yeah,
compared to all
absolutely.
Of the admin and the promotion and yeah. the marketing and the blah, blah, blah. But I guess being involved in running a club, you do have probably a little bit more experience of that side than the average stand-up coming here.
Yeah, I think so. So our club opened officially opened in May. We did like a soft launch in April. And we have comedy 6 nights a week there. So there's a lot of promotion that's involved with that, a lot of admin that goes with that. And it's also helped me really understand more of how the inner workings of it all happens. And it's given me some great contacts as well, which has been brilliant. And as I say, then we had to set up the TV production company because we got this TV deal, which sounds like a ridiculous thing to say, but is what happened. And so there was a lot of learning there. Like, literally this morning, I was having conversations with legal about the edits and things like that. So getting more of an understanding of how that side works as well, I think is pretty useful for going forward. And my background before all of this, before I started performing, was I used to run businesses. I ran a small various different businesses and that. So I've got a bit of a business head on me to an extent as well. So it's not just like the creative side. That's probably the biggest part of me, but I understand a bit of the numbers and the technicalities and that as well. So I think that's quite a unique combination that I'm hoping will bode well for the future, but you know, we'll see.
Now, one thing that interests me about The Fringe is sort of with my, obviously, the comedy fan side over here, but I'm very interested in how creative people go about building businesses around their creativity.
Yeah.
And I think comedy, just like music, is very much an industry where it's very performer driven. Yes, okay, at some point you get an agent, management, and legal who help, but it's still you running the business.
Yeah.
And so here at the Edinburgh Fringe, you've got, you know, 1,000 in essence, self-employed entrepreneurial comedians who, yes, are doing 55 minutes on stage every night, but are also basically running a business.
Yeah, I mean, obviously doing The Fringe is not a smart business move, I would say. this is one way to spend an awful lot of money in a short space of time.
Except if it works, it really works.
Yes, I hear that's happening for some people. There's definitely still seats available if you'd like to come and see my show and help it work for me. But I'm not looking at this from a business point of view. This is a learning point of view. you, and I'd love the right people to see it and understand more about me. You know, I've not been going very long, so not everybody knows very much about me. I would love them to, and I'd love them to come and see this. So from that point of view, I think it's worth more than money. But I do think it's really interesting that you need to have a bit of a business head on it as well. You can't just be 100% creative, because you could write a really brilliant comedy show, but that there's no market for, that there's no audience for, and what would be the point of that? Says the guy who has written a show that means he literally has to stand in the street and be like, I think you'd like a show about gay people, which is not an easy thing to do. I'm not sure where the market for that is.
And when it's all a big success, do you have to cut in the friends without whom you would not be in comedy?
I assume so. Yes, I will. I'll give them a cut. I'll pop back down the pub and buy them a drink and say, it turns out I was okay at it. They've been very supportive, and they've been and seen all of my shows and the big stuff that I've done. They were at the TV filming. And they're very much in the camp of I told you so, which I think is payment enough.
They're getting the smug glow.
Exactly. I'm angry at how well it's going, put it like that, because I don't like to be wrong about things.
Okay, let's wrap up there, but quickly let's do, first of all, the Edinburgh plugs, so yep. The venue, the times, etc.
Okay, so the show's called David Ian, Just a Perfect Gay. It's 9:05 at the Caves, and it is every night except the 14th.
And then if people want to find you and or the club online?
Yes, so you can find me on Instagram at Mr. David Ian, or my website's davidian.co.uk, or you can just search for thequeercomedyclub.co.uk and you'll find all the details of all the different shows that we've got there as well.
That is awesome. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.